I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the History of Alchemy podcast. My name is Travis Dow.
And I'm Pete Coleman from the Bohemican.com podcast.
Today we're going to talk about Albertus Magnus, also known as Albert the Great or Albert of Cologne, and he lived in the 13th century. He is a Catholic saint, which kind of makes it interesting for us to talk about a saint in an alchemist podcast. He's very famous among these kind of circles. The reason I think it's interesting is because he's really a scientist, which is where he gets the reputation from.
And during this time in the church, it was very dangerous to start throwing science around when you had this concept that the whole universe revolved around the earth.
Yeah.
And so everything was explained into God's creation. The idea of being able to say as man, how can we explain this through the concept of science or scientific theory, was considered somewhat blasphemous.
Yeah, he did get a reputation for that. This is the time of, like you said, the sun was revolving around the earth, the whole Aristotelian kind of way of thinking, and in particular, you got your knowledge from books. So you got everything you knew. If you were educated, that means you read it somewhere. You didn't go out and experiment.
And I would have to say, if you got it from books, that meant that A, you were educated or well-to-do, and you were literate. So
yeah.
that really meant a very select group of people. And that included people that were able to read the Bible. Now, for the most part, it was in Latin. It was Greek and Latin. Mm-hmm. But you had to be educated to read those languages. And so that knowledge even was selected for a given few. And so it made it very difficult for other people to gain knowledge. He was known as Dr. Universalis, which really kind of goes well with his concept of being in the Catholic Church. Catholic in itself means universal.
Mm-hmm.
And so having that attached to his name as Doctor, I think was very apropos. He was a Dominican friar.
Doctor of the Universe?
Doctor of the Universe. Masters of the Universe? Not quite. Mm. But really a learned man. As a Dominican friar, he was also Bishop of Cologne and later on became a saint.
Yeah.
He is the patron saint of natural sciences.
Mm-hmm. So saint of science.
Saint of sciences. So when people have their gripings with the Catholic Church, they say that it's not a church of science, it's a church of thought and feeling and faith and prayer. That's not exactly all true. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of science involved with things. It's just at some point what we consider new science or universality of science did not really come into play until later when the church had to really kind of grasp with
different,
it.
Different view of what science was.
Right. So the church is evolving, and it had evolved. It just had to take baby steps to get to that certain point. But Albert the Great really kind of bridged that gap between science and religion.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we look at him, he was actually honored by the Catholic Church at the time as Doctor of the Church, one of only 35 recipients of that honor.
So that's saying something, yeah.
And at the time, if you were to travel in North Italy on the way to Venice, you might have heard of a little town called Padua.
Mm-hmm.
Padua had a university system that was well-renowned. You might know of one of their most learned students that come through there, Galileo Galilei.
There you go.
All right.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit later, of course, but we're talking about the 13th century, and mm-hmm. we're talking about Albert the Great.
Yeah.
And where he got his knowledge from.
Yeah, so he was educated in Padua. He traveled around, but in his early years, at that time, knowledge comes from books. So he studied Aristotle's writings thoroughly. You know, he commented, what made him unique was he commented on almost all of Aristotle's writings. So he didn't pick and choose. He really kind of covered the whole corpus of literature there. And later, if you studied Aristotle, you probably read Albertus Magnus's kind of commentary on these things. But in any case, so that was in Padua. And then at some point, the Virgin Mary told him to enter holy orders. And you mentioned he was a Dominican.
Yeah. And this is important because in order to become a saint, that he later was beatified, to become a saint and then pass through the process of sainthood through the Catholic Church, you have to have at least, if I'm not mistaken, two miracles that are witnessed and documented and researched by the Catholic Church. And there also has to be some connection with the Holy Trinity, with the Virgin Mary.
So this could be one of them.
This could be one of those issues that he was able to say that Virgin Mary talked to him to give him the push he needed to go into the order.
Yeah, and that was significant. I mean, at this point in life, he switched gears pretty drastically. So he, like I just said, he entered the Dominican order, and then he studied theology at Bologna, and after his studies, which is quite extensive, but to skip ahead a little bit, he taught in Cologne, Regensburg, Freiburg, Strasbourg, Hildesheim, Paris. So, I mean, he really kind of made the tour there. He received his doctorate, and Thomas Aquinas started to study under him. So, you know, he was also sanctified, canonized. We spoke about him earlier.
In the very first show.
What's interesting here, because alchemy at this point, when we talk about 13th century, we're talking about pre-Renaissance. So what makes him so unique, especially in that time period, is when I say he studied virtually all of Aristotle, that means he actually got some of those writings from the Muslim world. So, you know, Arabic writings. And before him, Aristotle was certainly known, but to a much lesser extent. This, you know, like I said, this is not the Renaissance. In the Renaissance, everyone would have known. So that's very interesting, that he was kind of before his time. And then another interesting thing is, so he had this book knowledge, but where he got his reputation as being an alchemist, and this might have not happened until after his death. Like, if you ask him, are you an alchemist, he clearly would have been against that, probably, which, again, you know, he's part of the church. What got him his reputation was, unlike his contemporaries, he went outside the books. So he actually looked at nature, made observations, and he was a strong believer in what we would call scientific sort of experiments. You know, he actually experimented in nature, which later, you know, he's kind of closer to Earth than most of his contemporaries. So this earned him a reputation as like an alchemist and sorcerer type. You know, what is this mysterious thing he's doing out in the woods, you know?
So. Well, you know, I would say he might have been the front runner to the idea of intelligent design when you talk about science and religion being lumped together.
Sure.
I know that's kind of a hot topic.
Like, how did God create the world? I want to find out how God ticks, right?
Well, you know, when you press the who's who of science, when it comes to string theory, when it comes to the creation of Big Bang theory of our universe, and is it expanding, is it shrinking, you get down to a fundamental question: how could this all happen? And usually it gets to a point of saying, I don't know, and there might be an issue of intelligent design here. Mm-hmm. And to say that science can't answer everything, I don't know if it's necessarily a cop-out, but it's one of those things where at the time he was the guy that must have had said to people that are asking serious questions, are you a heretic? And he said, no, listen, it's intelligent. Nature's intelligent design. Look at a butterfly. Look at the seasons.
There's a miracle there.
There's a reason for everything, and God put things in motion. And not to get too on the religious track, but we are talking about a man of God here.
Oh, yeah.
And he looked at the idea of saying, what can we do to better our understanding of nature and science? We must be getting closer to God if we can do that. Mm-hmm. If we can have that knowledge set. Albert the Great had a very strong legacy. Many people that study a variety of things, from geography to astronomy to astrology, mineralogy, chemistry, zoology, physiology, theology, botany.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He had done so much good for getting these sciences really kick-started in the European Western world. Like you said, Travis, taking from the Muslim community and being able to bridge that gap before the rest of the Crusades kind of helped bring back more of that information. He was a front runner in this.
Yeah.
So his legacy of writing these works down and passing his knowledge on to succeeding generations was invaluable to many people in the social sciences as well as the natural sciences.
Right. And I'm going to clarify and say that was really knowledge. Like he actually wrote down, for the most part, things that he really observed. I mean, clearly he had works on theology and these kind of things, but after his death, there was some alchemical texts that were attributed to him, and it's hard to say that he actually wrote that. So after his death, some of these texts were attributed to him, but probably not a big basis in truth. And these rumors, I think we kind of alluded to it on the introduction, but when I asked you, had anybody ever found the Philosopher's Stone, the answer was this guy. And in fact, it went on so far as to say that he found the stone and passed it on to Thomas Aquinas. Probably not true. However, he did claim, and this is a first-person account, so he did claim to have witnessed the transmutation of something into gold. So there's interesting. In fact, he mentions a lot of things in passing that you're like, now hold on, let me, what? Because so much of it really is kind of fact-based stuff that you're, it's interesting when he does mention these things. Another thing he mentioned was, in passing, like one sentence, the power in stones, or like the power in minerals, which is a very kind of New Age concept, far outside the church, so you're kind of meant...
You're talking like power like from crystals?
Like, let's call it, exactly, let's call it like energy in crystals. And so this has been latched onto by later occultists and up to present day. And a lot of people are wondering, what did he mean by that? Because it was just really like a sentence. Like he just said, there's some kind of energy in minerals. And was this just a common belief that he regurgitated? Or, why did he write that? But, so on the more scientific side, when I talk about alchemy and chemistry, what I think is interesting is he's the first, or credited to be the first, to isolate arsenic. And he did this by heating soap with arsenic trisulfide. He experimented with photosensitive chemicals, which is like really cool stuff if you're an alchemist. You make something glow, kind of.
Now, are you talking about things you would do when you're developing film and camera? That type of chemical,
silver nitrate and stuff.
Yeah,
I guess. But see, I don't know the context. Like, because there's another alchemist that was just interested in phosphorus because it could be kind of luminescent in some ways.
It caused a chemical reaction that would probably amaze a lot of people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, I think about gunpowder. Same thing with the Chinese alchemists. So anything that had the ability to kind of awe or amaze people. On the other hand, that could easily be misconstrued as magic. So it could be a dangerous thing because, you're making stuff glow.
I think there's a line you don't cross, mm-hmm. in this time. And I think he probably saw that line and said, I can keep doing my research, but I got to be careful about my writings, and I also need to be careful about what is being said about me.
Well, and here's another thing that I think is interesting within the church is, for instance, when I grew up in Munich – this is when I first noticed it, that on the side there's the most famous church in Munich, like that huge cathedral, the Frauenkirche, and on the side of that is the big zodiac sign.
Okay.
All the zodiac signs, and to me, in the 20th century, I'd never made the connection between the zodiac and church. And this is kind of where it comes from. So he did have an interest in astrology and wrote about it.
This was very interesting about astrology. It's one of these pseudosciences. Mm-hmm. That today, if you were to talk to somebody in the church, either a Protestant or Catholic church, they would tell you that it's not the right way to go.
Mm-hmm.
That it's mysticism, it's not true faith.
Which is why it was so surprising to find out on the side of that cathedral, right?
Exactly. But, and Albertus Magnus, he was the front runner, as we keep saying, he's the front runner. He's the one that broke the mold
mm-hmm.
with this type of science and still kept his feet still firmly in the church.
Mm-hmm.
Without being charged as a heretic or a sorcerer. He got very close, it sounds, at times, but he was able to kind of piece together that these sciences are a part of God's plan, God's will.
Yeah.
And so what's really interesting is that many people that believe in astrology today in the 21st century are probably, would actually definitely
mm-hmm.
have Albertus Magnus to thank. mm-hmm. for their knowledge set.
Whether they know it or not.
Whether they know it or not. Because and most of them would probably laugh at that idea. Are you telling me someone from the Catholic Church really was the founding father of astrology? Mm-hmm. Come on. You know? But yes, that's what we're saying.
Yeah.
His concept?
It's important to note that astrology, of course, existed, you know, like our basic system is Greco-Babylonian.
Yeah.
However, it's Albertus Magnus that kind of formalized it in the way that we would think of it. I just want to clarify that as listeners will say, oh, no, it's been around for thousands of years. Yes. However.
However. And I would also, if I can elaborate further on that concept, humanity's always looked towards nature and celestial bodies as almost deities, or not almost, but really deities.
Mm-hmm.
Nature worship. The Celts were famous for this. You know, they looked into the stars and they knew when certain parts of the season meant certain closeness to the dead.
In fact, you better pay attention.
You better pay attention
for harvest.
This stuff does go way, way back, way into the Stone Age. But we're talking 13th century here, and Albertus Magnus, you know, he had an idea about incorporating God into this. He said, and his thought was that God's intent, his wishes for humanity, would eventually get to Earth from a celestial sort of distance.
Mm-hmm.
But the planets, the stars, the cosmos got in the way and maybe diluted the message from God.
All those things revolving around the Earth?
Yeah, exactly. So when it eventually got to Earth, it got a little warped. It got a little skewed.
Uh-huh.
So the best thing you could do with this knowledge of astrology was to say, okay, I understand the full moon's out tonight. That's going to make people act a little wild and kooky. So what I should do is I should pray even harder that I'm not tempted by temptation.
Yeah.
And that I'm not going to succumb to maybe my base feelings or knowledge or my base feelings or wants or desires. And so using that to defend yourself against the devil or defend yourself against what pressures you would have in this 13th century world, a form of knowledge and a form of safety and being content.
So you can be prepared for that that temptation coming up when Venus is in Sagittarius, or I don't know what I just said.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure someone will be like, okay, you know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But the thing is about astrology, our farming system as an agricultural species comes down to some of this stuff. You know, I remember my great-grandfather would tell me, you plant things under the ground at the light of a dark moon.
Oh, yeah?
All right?
Okay.
And that's probably a German – you know, background to this construct of planting something like a potato under the ground. It's going to grow better at the light of dark moon because, you know, the science will tell you that, you know, that's just the best time of year to do it.
So, but yeah. This
but
is,
he looked the, at it as the moon is powerful.
But
and,
these
and,
are through observation. I mean, you know, it's
all of this
and
is
miss.
Through observation.
Yeah.
I think Albertus Magnus said, I'm going to write down and record this observation and I'm going to make sense of it through the lens of God.
Yep. And we will actually... I'll do an episode on astrology because it ties into a lot of the – I mean, you see, it just comes up all the time when we talk about alchemy that I think we haven't had an episode so far where there hasn't been an overlap. So the same people that are looking to the stars are also looking into their alchemist laboratory trying to figure out how to transmutate something. So we'll do a whole episode on it at some point and get into this and – He is – Albertus Magnus is a key figure in this, so that's why we wanted to kind of bring this up. What's interesting – so for this podcast, I like to look at people that were total quacks.
Charlatans.
Far outside the church. And I have some examples, even you know, some that were here in Prague and others that were – doing their best to understand what's going on, you know, answer those questions, you know, how did we get here? Even if it's, okay, well, you know, we were created, but how were we created? Or, you know, why did God do it this way? Even in that context. So some of those were kind of proto-scientists and others were just straight out for money or whatever. So it's nice to talk about this guy that he was really, I would put him on the scientist side and he influenced a lot of later people. And so, you know, Albertus Magnus, was he an alchemist? I'm going to say no, myth debunked. But other people will say, okay, they were really more on the alchemist side, probably would have been burnt as a heretic in many places and many times. So it's interesting to look at. Albertus Magnus actually comes up in popular culture every once in a while. For instance, he was mentioned in Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. He was one of Frankenstein doctor's heroes. Like, you know, he mentioned a couple of mystical people.
Really?
That, yeah.
I missed that.
And I probably didn't know who he was when I read it. Terry Pratchett, if I'm sure we have some fans out there. If you've ever read the Discworld novels, the character of Alberto Malich, who was the founder of the Unseen University and later Death's manservant, Albert, was based off of Albertus Magnus. Like, you know, so he had him in mind when he created that character. There's an asteroid named after him because of his contribution to, I'm going to say astrology more than astronomy, but there's also a plant species because of botany, right? So it's called Alberta Magna is a plant species. And if you want to read more about him, I've written a kind of summary of him about this and some other little tidbits about him on historyofalchemy.com, where you'll also be able to find other episodes of History of Alchemy podcast. And by all means, send us an email. We'd love to hear from you at podcast@historyofalchemy.com. We're on Facebook as History of Alchemy podcast, and you know, we'd love to hear your thoughts there.
Yeah, please tune into our sister podcast, Bohemican, at bohemican.com. It's all about Czech history and the Czech Republic and across this great Republic of Bohemia and what I'm doing here in Prague. So we would love to have you listen to that as well. We'll be back every 2 weeks, so I want to say thanks for listening.
Yep, thanks.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.